Odrade had explained it one afternoon to Mirbella, the two of them alone in a gray-walled interview chamber of the no-ship, standing close together, facing each other, eyes at a level, quite informal and intimate, except for the knowledge of those comis all around them. "Watchdogs," Odrade said, responding to a question from Mirbella. "It means we are mutual gadflies. Don't make that more than it is. We seldom nag. A simple word can be enough." Mirbella, her oval face drawn into a look of distaste, the wide-set green eyes intent, obviously thought Odrade referred to some common signal, a word or saying the sisters used in such situations. "What word?" "Any word, damn it. Whatever's appropriate. It's like a mutual reflex. We share a common tick that comes not to annoy us. We welcome it because it keeps us on our toes."
"And you'll watchdog me if I become a reverend mother?"
"We want our watchdogs. We'd be weaker without them." "It sounds oppressive." "We don't find it so."
"I think it's repellent."
She looked at the glittering lenses in the ceiling.
"Like those damned comis."
"We take care of our own, Mirbella. Once you're a Bene Gesserit, you're assured of lifelong maintenance."
"A comfortable niche,"
sneering. Odrade spoke softly. "Something quite different. You are challenged throughout your life. You repay the sisterhood right up to the limits of your abilities.
Watchdogs.
We're always mindful of one another. Some of us in positions of power can be authoritarian at times, familiar even, but only to a point carefully measured for the requirements of the moment.
Never really warm or tender, eh?
That's the rule. Affection, maybe, but no love. I've told you the rule." And Odrade could see the reaction clearly on Mirbella's face. "There it is. They will demand that I give up Duncan."
"So there's no love among the Bene Gesserit."
How sad her tone. There was hope for Mirbella yet.
"Loves occur," Odrade said,
"but my sisters treat them as aberrations."
"So what I feel for Duncan is aberration?"
"And sisters will try to treat it."
"Treat? Apply correctional therapy to the afflicted?"
"Love is considered a sign of rot in sisters."
"I see signs of rot in you."
As though she followed Odrade's thoughts, Belanda dragged Odrade out of reverie.
"That honored mater will never commit herself to us."
Belanda wiped a bit of luncheon gravy from the corner of her mouth.
"We're wasting our time trying to teach her our ways."
At least Belle was no longer calling Mirbella whore, Odrade thought. That was an improvement.
All governments suffer a recurring problem. Power attracts pathological personalities. It is not that power corrupts, but that it is magnetic to the corruptible. Such people have a tendency to become drunk on violence, a condition to which they are quickly addicted. Missionaria Protectiva, text QIV, Decto. Rebecca knelt on the yellow tile floor as she had been ordered to do, not daring to look up at great honored mater seated so remotely high, so dangerous. 2 hours Rebecca had waited here, almost in the center of a giant room, while great honored mater and her companions ate a lunch served by obsequious attendants. Rebecca marked the manners of the attendants with care and emulated them. Her eye socket still ached from transplants the rabbi had given her less than a month ago. These eyes showed a blue iris and white sclera, no clue to the spice agony in her past. It was a temporary defense. In less than a year, the new eyes would betray her with total blue. She judged the ache in her eyes to be the least of her problems. An organic implant fed her metered doses of melange, concealing her dependence. The supply was gauged to last about 60 days. If these honored maters held her longer than that, withdrawal would plunge her into an agony that would make the original appear mild by comparison. The most immediately dangerous thing was the share being metered to her with the spice. If these women detected it, they certainly would be suspicious. You are doing well. Be patient. That was other memory from the horde of Lampadas. The voice rang softly in her head. It had the sound of Lucilla, but Rebecca could not be sure. It had become a familiar voice in the month since the sharing, when it had announced itself as Speaker of your Mohalata. These whores cannot match our knowledge. Remember that, and let it give you courage. The presence of others within, who subtracted none of her attention from what went on around her, had filled her with awe. We call it simulflow, Speaker had said. Simulflow multiplies your awareness. When she had tried to explain this to the rabbi, he had reacted in anger. You have been tainted by unclean thoughts. They had been in the rabbi's study late at night. Stealing time from the days allotted us, he called it. The study was an underground room, its walls lined with old books, Redulian crystals, scrolls. The room was protected from probes by the best Ixion devices, and they had been modified by his own people to improve them. She was allowed to sit beside his desk at such times while he leaned back in an old chair. A glow globe placed low beside him cast an antique yellow light on his bearded face, glinting off the spectacles he wore almost as badge of office. Rebecca pretended confusion. But you said it was required of us to save this treasure from Lampadas. Have the Bene Gesserit not been honorable with us? She saw the worry in his eyes. You heard Levy talking yesterday of the questions being asked here. Why did the Bene Gesserit witch come to us? That is what they ask. Our story is consistent and believable, Rebecca protested. The sisters have taught us ways that even truthsay cannot penetrate. I don't know. The rabbi shook his head sadly. What is a lie? What is truth? Do we condemn ourselves with our own mouths? It is pogrom that we resist, Rabbi. That usually stiffened his resolve. Cossacks. Yes, you are right, daughter. There have been Cossacks in every age. And we are not the only ones who have felt their knouts and swords as they rode into the village with murder in their hearts. It was odd, Rebecca thought, how he managed to give the impression that these events were of recent occurrence, and that his eyes had seen them. Never to forgive, never to forget. Lidetzi was yesterday. What a powerful thing that was in the memory of secret Israel. Pogrom. Almost as powerful in its continuity as these Bene Gesserit presences she carried in her awareness. Almost. That was the thing the rabbi resisted, she told herself. I fear that you have been taken from us, the rabbi said. What have I done to you? What have I done? And all in the name of honor. He looked at the instruments on his study wall that reported the nightly power accumulations from the vertical axis windmills placed around the farmstead. The instrument said the machines were humming away up there, storing energy for the morrow. That was a gift of the Bene Gesserit, freedom from Ix. Independence. What a peculiar word. Without looking at Rebecca, he said, I find this thing of other memory very difficult, and always have. Memory should bring wisdom, but it does not. It is how we order the memory, and where we apply our knowledge." He turned and looked at her, his face falling into shadows. "What is it this one inside you says? This one you think of as Lucilla?" Rebecca could see it pleased him to say Lucilla's name. If Lucilla could speak through a daughter of secret Israel, then she still lived and had not been betrayed. Rebecca lowered her gaze as she spoke. "She says we have these inner images, sounds and sensations that come at command or intrude under necessity."
"Necessity, yes. And what is that except reports of senses from flesh that may have been where you should not have been and done offensive things?"
"Other bodies, other memories," Rebecca thought. Having experienced this, she knew she could never willingly abandon it. "Perhaps I have indeed become Bene Gesserit. That is what he fears, of course."
"I will tell you a thing," the rabbi said. "This crucial intersection of living awareness, as they call it, that is nothing unless you know how your own decisions go out from you like threads into the lives of others."
"To see our own actions in the reactions of others, yes. That is how the sisters view it."
"That is wisdom. What is it the lady says they seek?"
"Influence on the maturing of humankind."
And she finds that events are not beyond her influence, merely beyond her senses."
"That is almost wise. But maturity..." "Ah, Rebecca, do we interfere with a higher plan? Is it the right of humans to set limits on the nature of Yahweh?"
"I think Leto the Second understood that. This lady in you denies it. She says he was a damnable tyrant."
"He was, but there have been wise tyrants before him, and doubtless will be more after us. They call him Shaitan. He had Satan's own powers. I share their fear of that. He was not so much prescient as he was a cement. He fixed the shape of what he saw."
"That is what the lady says.
But she says it is their grail that he preserved."
"Again, they are almost wise."
A great sigh shook the rabbi, and once more he looked to the instruments on his wall. Energy for the morrow. He returned his attention to Rebecca. She was changed. He could not avoid awareness of it. She had become very like the Bene Gesserit. It was understandable. Her mind was filled with all of those people from Lampadas. But they were not Gadarene swine to be driven into the sea, and their diabolism with them. "And I am not another Jesus."
"This thing they tell you about the Mother Superior Odrade, that she often damns her own archivists and the archives with them."
"What a thing. Are not archives like the books in which we preserve our wisdom?"
"Then am I an archivist, Rabbi?"
Her question confounded him, but it also illuminated the problem. He smiled.
"I tell you something, daughter. I admit to a little sympathy with this Odrade. There's always something grumbling about archivists."
"Is that wisdom, Rabbi?" How slyly she asked it.
"Believe me, daughter, it is. How carefully the archivist suppresses even the smallest hint of judgment. One word after another. Such arrogance."
"How do they judge which words to use, Rabbi?"
"Ah, a bit of wisdom comes to you, daughter. But these Bene Gesserits have not achieved wisdom, and it is their grail that prevents it."
She could see it on his face. "He tries to arm me with doubts about these lives I carry." Let me tell you a thing about the Bene Gesserit, he said. Nothing came into his mind then. No words, no sage advice. This had not happened to him for years. There was only one course open to him. Speak from the heart. Perhaps they have been too long on the road to Damascus without a blinding flash of illumination, Rebecca. I hear them say they act for the benefit of humankind. Somehow I cannot see this in them, nor do I believe the tyrant saw it. When Rebecca started to reply, he stopped her with an upraised hand. Mature humanity, that is their grail. Is it not the mature fruit that is plucked and eaten? On the floor of Junction's great hall, Rebecca remembered these words, seeing the personification of them not in the lives she preserved, but in the actions of her captors. Great honored Mater had finished eating. She wiped her hands on the gown of an attendant. Let her approach, great honored Mater said. Pain lanced Rebecca's left shoulder, and she lurched forward on her knees. The one called Logno had come up behind with the stealth of a hunter and had jabbed a shunt goad into the captive's flesh. Laughter echoed through the room. Rebecca staggered to her feet and, staying just ahead of the goad, arrived at the foot of the steps leading up to the great honored Mater, where the goad stopped her. Down, Logno emphasized the command with another jab. Rebecca sank to her knees and stared straight ahead at the risers of the steps. The yellow tiles displayed tiny scratches. Somehow these flaws reassured her. Great honored Mater said, Let her be, Logno. I wish answers, not screams. Then to Rebecca, Look at me, woman. Rebecca raised her eyes and stared up at the face of death. What an unremarkable face it was to have that threat in it. So evenly featured, almost plain. Such a small figure. This amplified the peril Rebecca sensed. What powers the small woman must have to rule these terrible people. Do you know why you are here? Great honored Mater demanded. In her most obsequious tones, Rebecca said, I was told, O great honored Mater, that you wished me to recount the lore of Truthsay and other matters of Gamu. You were mated to a truthsayer. It was accusation. He is dead, great honored Mater. No, Logno. This was directed at the aide who lunged forward with the goad. This wretch does not know our ways. Now go stand at the side, Logno, where I will not be annoyed by your impetuosity. You will speak to me only in response to questions, or when I command it, wretch! Great honored Mater shouted. Rebecca cringed. Speaker whispered in Rebecca's head, That was almost voice. Be warned. Have you ever known any of the ones who call themselves Bene Gesserit? Great honored Mater asked. Really now? Everyone has encountered the witches, great honored Mater. What do you know of them? So this is why they brought me here. Only what I have heard, great honored Mater. Are they brave? It is said they always try to avoid risks, great honored Mater. You are worthy of us, Rebecca. That is the pattern of these whores. The marble rolls down the incline in its proper channel. They think you dislike us. Are these Bene Gesserit rich? Great honored Mater asked. I think the witches are poor beside you, honored Mater, Rebecca said. Why do you say that? Do not speak just to please me. But, honored Mater, could the witches send a great ship from Gamu to here just to carry me? And where are the witches now? They hide from you. Yes, where are they? Honored Mater demanded. Rebecca shrugged. "Were you on Gamu when the one they called Bashar fled us?" Honored Mater asked.
"She knows you were."
"I was there, great Honored Mater, and heard the stories. I do not believe them."
"Believe what we tell you to believe, wretch. What are the stories you heard?"
"That he moved with a speed the eye could not see. That he killed many people with only his hands. That he stole a no-ship and fled into the scattering."
"Believe that he fled, wretch."
"See how she fears? She cannot hide the trembling."
"Speak of the truth, say," great Honored Mater commanded.
"Great Honored Mater, I do not understand the truth, say. I know only the words of my Shalem, my husband. I can repeat his words if you wish."
Great Honored Mater considered this, glancing from side to side at her aides and counselors, who were beginning to show signs of boredom.
"Why doesn't she just kill this wretch?"
Rebecca, seeing the violence in eyes that glared orange at her, shrank into herself. She thought of her husband by his love name, Shoel, now, and his words comforted. He had shown the proper talent while still a child. Some called it an instinct, but Shoel had never used that word.
"Trust your gut feelings. That's what my teachers always said."
It was such a down-to-earth expression that he said it usually threw off the ones who came seeking the esoteric mystery.
"There is no secret," Shoel had said. "It's training and hard work like anything else. You exercise what they call petite perception, the ability to detect very small variations in human reactions." Rebecca could see such small reactions in those who stared down at her.
"They want me dead. Why?"
Speaker had advice.
"The Great One likes to show off her power over the others. She does not do what others want, but what she thinks they do not want."
"Great Honored Mater," Rebecca ventured, "you are so rich and powerful. Surely you must have a place of menial employment where I may be of service to you."
"You wish to enter my service?"
What a feral grin.
"It would make me happy, great Honored Mater."
"I am not here to make you happy."
Logno took a step forward onto the floor.
"Then make us happy, Dama. Let us have some sport with..." "Silence!"
Ah, that was a mistake, calling her by the intimate name here among the others. Logno drew back and almost dropped the goad. Great Honored Mater stared down at Rebecca with an orange glare.
"You will go back to your miserable existence on Gamu, wretch. I will not kill you. That would be a mercy. Having seen what we could give you, live your life without it."
"Great Honored Mater," Logno protested, "we have suspicions about..."
"I have suspicions about you, Logno. Send her back and alive. Hear me? Do you think us incapable of finding her, if we ever have need of her?"
"No, Great Honored Mater."
"We are watching you, wretch,"
Great Honored Mater said. "Bait. She thinks of you as something to capture larger game. How interesting. This one has a head and uses it, in spite of her violent nature. So that's how she came to power." All the way back to Gamu, confined to stinking quarters in a ship that had once served the guild, Rebecca considered her predicament. Surely those whores did not expect her to mistake their intent, but perhaps they did. Subservience, cringing. They revel in such things. She knew this came from a bit of Shoel's truthsay, as much as from the Lampadas' advisors. "You accumulate a lot of small observations, sensed but never brought to consciousness," Shoel had said. "Cumulatively, they say things to you, but not in a language anyone speaks.
language isn't necessary. She had thought this one of the oddest things she had ever heard, but that was before her own agony. In bed at night, comforted by darkness and the touch of loving flesh, they had acted wordlessly, but had shared words too. Language obstructs you, Shoel had said. What you do is learn to read your own reactions. Sometimes you can find words to describe this, sometimes not. No words? Not even for the questions? Words you want, is it? How are these? Trust, belief, truth, honesty. Those are good words, Shoel, but they miss the mark. Don't depend on them. Then what do you depend on? My own internal reactions. I read myself, not the person in front of me. I always know a lie because I want to turn my back on the liar. So that's how you do it, pounding his bare arm. Others do it differently. One person I heard say she knew a lie because she wanted to put her arm through the liar's arm and walk away, comforting the liar. You may think that's nonsense, but it works. I think it's very wise, Shoel, love speaking. She did not really know what he meant. My precious love, he said, cradling her head on his arm. Truthsayers have a truth sense that, once awakened, works all the time. Please don't tell me I'm wise when it's your love speaking. I'm sorry, Shoel. She liked the smell of his arm and buried her head in the crook of it, tickling him. But I want to know everything you know. He pushed her head into a more comfortable position. You know what my third stage instructor said? Know nothing. Learn to be totally naive. She was astonished. Nothing at all? You approach everything with a clean slate. Nothing on you or in you. Whatever comes is written there by itself. She began to see it. Nothing to interfere. Correct. You are the original ignorant savage, completely unsophisticated to the point where you back right into ultimate sophistication. You find it without looking for it, you might say. Now that is wise, Shoel. I'll bet you were the best student they ever had, the quickest and the... I thought it was interminable nonsense. You didn't. Until one day I read a little twitch in me. It wasn't the movement of a muscle, or something someone else might detect. Just a twitch. Where was it? Nowhere I could describe, but my fourth stage instructor had prepared me for it. Grab that thing with gentle hands, delicately. One of the students thought he meant your real hands. Oh, how we laughed. That was cruel. She touched his cheek and felt the beginning of his dark stubble. It was late, but she did not feel sleepy. I suppose it was cruel, but when the twitch came, I knew it. I had never felt such a thing before. I was surprised by it, too, because knowing it then, I knew it had been there all along. It was familiar. It was my truth sense twitching. She thought she could feel truth sense stirring within herself. The feeling of wonder in his voice aroused something. It was mine then, he said. It belonged to me, and I belonged to it. No separation ever again. How wonderful that must be. Awe and envy in her voice. No, some of it I hate. Seeing some people this way is like seeing them eviscerated, their guts hanging out. That's disgusting. Yes, but there are compensations, love. There are people you meet, people who are like beautiful flowers extended to you by an innocent child. Innocence. My own innocence responds, and my truth sense is strengthened. That is what you do for me, my love. The no-ship of the honored maters arrived at Camus, and they sent her down to the landing flat in the garbage lighter. It disgorged her beside the ship's discards and excrement,
but she did not mind.
Home.
I'm home, and Lampadis survives. The rabbi, however, did not share her enthusiasm. Once more, they sat in his study, but now she felt more familiar with other memory, much more confident. He could see this.
You are even more like them than ever. It's unclean.
Rabbi, we all have unclean ancestors. I am fortunate in that I know some of mine.
What is this? What are you saying?
All of us are descendants of people who did nasty things, Rabbi. We don't like to think of barbarians in our ancestry, but they're there.
Such talk.
Reverend mothers can recall them all, Rabbi. Remember, it is the victors who breed. You understand?
I have never heard you talk so boldly. What has happened to you, daughter?
I survived. Knowing that victory sometimes is achieved at a moral price.
What is this? These are evil words.
Evil? Barbarism is not even the proper word for some of the evil things our ancestors did. The ancestors of all of us, Rabbi. She saw she had hurt him and felt the cruelty of her own words, but could not stop. How could he escape the truth of what she said? He was an honorable man. She spoke more softly, but her words cut him even deeper. Rabbi, if you shared witness to some of the things other memory has forced me to know, you would come back seeking new words for evil. Some things our ancestors have done debase the worst label you could imagine.
Rebecca, I know necessities of... Don't make excuses about necessities of the times. You, a rabbi, know better. When are we without a moral sense?
It's just that sometimes we don't listen. He put his hands over his face, rocking back and forth in the old chair. It creaked mournfully. Rabbi, you I have always loved and respected. I went through the agony for you. I shared Lampadis for you. Do not deny what I have learned from this.
He lowered his hands. I do not deny, daughter, but permit me my pain.
Out of all these realizations, Rabbi, the thing I must deal with most immediately and without respite is that there are no innocents.
Rebecca.
Guilty may not be the right word, Rabbi, but our ancestors did things for which payment must be made.
That I understand, Rebecca.
It is a balance that... Don't tell me you understand when I know you don't. She stood and glared down at him. It's not a balanced book that you set aright. How far back would you go?
Rebecca, I am your rabbi. You must not talk this way, especially to me.
The farther back you go, Rabbi, the worse the evil atrocities and higher the price. You cannot go back that far, but I am forced to it. Turning, she left him, ignoring the pleading in his voice, the painful way he said her name. As she closed the door, she heard him say,
What have we done? Israel, help her.
The writing of history is largely a process of diversion. Most historical accounts distract attention from the secret influences behind great events. The Bashar Tig. When left to his own devices, Idaho often explored his no-ship prison. So much to see and learn about this Ixian artifact. It was a cave of wonders. He paused on this afternoon's restless walk through his quarters and looked at the tiny komais built into the glittering surface of a doorway. They were watching him. He had the odd sensation of seeing himself through those prying eyes. What did the sisters think when they looked at him?
The blocky, Gola child from Gamu's long-dead keep had become a lanky man, dark skin and hair. The hair was longer than when he had entered this no-ship on the last day of Dune. Bene Gesserit's eyes peered below the skin. He was sure they suspected he was a Mentat, and he feared how they might interpret that. How could a Mentat expect to hide the fact from Reverend Mothers indefinitely? Foolishness. He knew they already suspected him of truthsay. He waved at the Komais and said, "I'm restless. I think I'll explore." Belanda hated it when he took that jocular attitude toward surveillance. She did not like him to roam the ship. She did not try to hide it from him. He could see the unspoken question in her glowering features whenever she came to confront him. Is he looking for a way to escape? Exactly what I'm doing, Bell, but not in the way you suspect. The no-ship presented him with fixed limits. The exterior force field he could not penetrate. Certain machinery areas where the drive, so he was told, had been temporarily disabled. Guard quarters, he could see into some of them, but not enter. The armory, the section reserved to the captive Tlilazu Saitali. He occasionally met Saitali at one of the barriers, and they peered at each other across the silencing field that held them apart. Then there was the information barrier, sections of ship records that would not respond to his questions, answers his warders would not give. Within these limits lay a lifetime of things to see and learn, even the lifetime of some 300 standard years he could reasonably expect. If honored maters do not find us. Idaho saw himself as the game they sought, wanting him even more than they wanted the women of Chapter House. He had no illusions about what the hunters would do to him. They knew he was here. The men he trained in sexual bonding and sent out to plague the honored maters, those men taunted the hunters. When the sisters learned of his Mentat ability, they would know immediately that his mind carried the memories of more than one Gola lifetime. The original did not have that talent. They would suspect he was a latent Kwisatz Haderach. Look how they rationed his melange. They were clearly terrified of repeating the mistake they had made with Paul Atreides and his tyrant son. 3,500 years of bondage. But dealing with Mirbella required Mentat awareness. He entered every encounter with her, not expecting to achieve answers, then or later. It was a typical Mentat approach. Concentrate on the questions. Mentats accumulated questions the way others accumulated answers. Questions created their own patterns and systems. This produced the most important shapes. You looked at your universe through self-created patterns, all composed of images, words, and labels. Everything temporary. All mingled in sensory impulses that reflected off his internal constructs, the way light bounced from bright surfaces. Idaho's original Mentat instructor had formed the temporary words for that first tentative construct. Watch for consistent movements against your internal screen. From that first hesitant dip into Mentat powers, Idaho could trace the growth of a sensitivity to changes in his own observations, always becoming Mentat. Belanda was his most severe trial. He dreaded her penetrating gaze and slashing questions. Mentat probing Mentat. He met her forays delicately, with reserve and patience. "Now what are you after?" As if he didn't know. He wore patience as a mask. But fear came naturally, and there was no harm in showing it. Belanda did not hide her wish to see him dead. Idaho accepted the fact that soon the Watchers would see only one possible source for the skills he was forced to use. A Mentat's real skills lay in that mental construct they called the Great Synthesis. It required a patience that non-Mentats did not even imagine possible. Mentat schools defined it as perseverance. You were a primitive tracker, able to read minuscule signs, tiny disturbances in the environment, and follow where these led. At the same time, you remained open to broad motions all around and within. This produced naivete, the basic Mentat posture, akin to that of truthsayers, but far more sweeping. "You are open to whatever the universe may do," his first instructor had said. "Your mind is not a computer. It is a response tool, key to whatever your senses display." Idaho always recognized when Belanda's senses were open. She stood there, gaze slightly withdrawn, and he knew few preconceptions cluttered her mind. His defense lay in her basic flaw. Opening the senses required an idealism that was foreign to Belanda. She did not ask the best questions, and he wondered at this. Would Odrade use a flawed Mentat? It went against her other performances. "I seek the questions that form the best images." Doing this, you never thought of yourself as clever, that you had the formula to provide the solution. You remained as responsive to new questions as you did to new patterns, testing, retesting, shaping and reshaping. A constant process, never stopping, never satisfied. It was your own private pavan, similar to that of other Mentats, but it carried always your own unique posture and steps. You are never truly a Mentat. That is why we call it the endless goal. The words of his teachers were burned into his awareness. As he accumulated observations of Belanda, he came to appreciate a viewpoint of those great Mentat masters who had taught him. Reverend mothers do not make the best Mentats. No Bene Gesserit appeared capable of completely removing herself from that binding absolute she achieved in the spice agony. Loyalty to her sisterhood. His teachers had warned him against absolutes. They created a serious flaw in a Mentat. "Everything you do, everything you sense and say is experiment. No deduction final. Nothing stops until dead, and perhaps not even then, because each life creates endless ripples. Induction bounces within, and you sensitize yourself to it. Deduction conveys illusions of absolutes. Kick the truth and shatter it." When Belanda's questions touched on the relationship between himself and Mirbella, he saw vague emotional responses. Amusement, jealousy. He could accept amusement, and even jealousy, about the compelling sexual demands of this mutual addiction. Is the ecstasy truly that great? He wandered through his quarters this afternoon, feeling displaced, as though newly here and not yet accepting these rooms as home. That is emotion talking to me. Over the years of his confinement, these quarters had taken on a lived-in appearance. This was his cave, the former supercargo suite. Large rooms with slightly curved walls, bedroom, library, workroom, sitting room, a green-tiled bath with dry and wet cleansing systems, and a long practice hall he shared with Mirbella for exercise. The rooms bore a unique collection of artifacts and marks of his presence. That sling chair placed at just the right angle to the console and projector, linking him to ship systems. Those Redulian records on that low-side table. And there were stains of occupancy. That dark brown blot on the work table. Spilled food had left its indelible mark. He moved restlessly into his sleeping quarters. The light was dimmer. His ability to identify the familiar held true for odors. There was a saliva-like smell to the bed, the residue of last night's sexual collision. That is the proper word, collision. The no-ship's air, filtered, recycled, and sweetened, often bored him. no break in the no-ship maze to the exterior world ever remained open long. He sometimes sat silently, sniffing, hoping for a faint trace of air that had not been adjusted to this prison's demands. There is a way to escape. He wandered out of his quarters and down the corridor, took the drop chute at the end of the passage, and emerged in the ship's lowest level. What is really out there in that world open to the sky? The bits Odre told him about events filled him with dread and a trapped feeling. No place to run. Am I wise to share my fears with Shiana? Mirbella merely laughed. I will protect you, love. Honored maters won't hurt me. Another false dream. But Shiana, how quickly she had picked up the hand language and entered the spirit of his conspiracy. Conspiracy? No. I doubt that any Reverend Mother will act against her sisters. Even the Lady Jessica went back to them in the end. But I don't ask Shiana to act against the sisterhood, only that she protect us from Mirbella's folly. The enormous powers of the hunters made only the destruction predictable. A mentat had but to look at their disruptive violence. They brought something else as well, something hinting at matters out there in the scattering. What were these futars Odraid mentioned with such casualness? Part human, part beast. That had been Lucilla's guess. And where is Lucilla? He found himself presently in the Great Hold, the kilometer-long cargo space where they had carried the last giant sandworm of Dune, bringing it to Chapter House. The area still smelled of spice and sand, filling his mind with long ago and the dead far away. He knew why he came so often to the Great Hold, doing it sometimes without even thinking, as he had just done. It both attracted and repelled. The illusion of unlimited space with traces of dust, sand, and spice carried the nostalgia of lost freedoms. But there was another side. This is where it always happened to him. Will it happen today? Without warning, the sense of being in the Great Hold would vanish. Then, the net shimmering in a molten sky. He was aware when the vision came that he was not really seeing a net. His mind translated what the senses could not define. A shimmering net, undulating like an infinite borealis. Then the net would part, and he would see the two people, man and woman. How ordinary they appeared, and yet extraordinary. A grandmother and grandfather in antique clothing, bib coveralls for the man, and a long dress with headscarf for the woman, working in a flower garden. He thought it must be more of the illusion. I am seeing this, but it is not really what I see. They always noticed him eventually. He heard their voices. There he is again, Marty, the old man would say, calling the woman's attention to Idaho. I wonder how it is he can look through, Marty asked once. Doesn't seem possible. He's spread pretty thin, I think. Wonder if he knows the danger. Danger. That was the word that always jerked him out of the vision. Not at your console today? For just an instant, Idaho thought it was the vision, the voice of that odd woman. Then he realized it was Odraid. Her voice came from close behind. He whirled and saw he had failed to close the hatch. She had followed him into the hold, stalking him quietly, avoiding the scattered patches of sand that might have grated underfoot and betrayed her approach. She looked tired and impatient. Why did she think I would be at my console? As though answering his unspoken question, she said, I find you at your console so often lately. For what do you search, Duncan? He shook his head without speaking. Why do I suddenly feel in peril? It was a rare feeling in Odraid's company. He could remember other occasions, though. Once when she had stared suspiciously at his hands in the field of his console.
fear associated with my counsel? Do I reveal my mentat hunger for data? Do they guess that I have hidden my private self there? Do I get no privacy at all? Anger and attack. She shook her head slowly from side to side, as much as to say, "You can do better than that." "This is your second visit today," he accused. "I must say you're looking well, Duncan." More circumlocution. "Is that what your watchers say?" "Don't be petty. I came for a chat with Mirbella. She said you'd be down here." "I suppose you know Mirbella's pregnant again." Was that trying to placate her? "For which we are grateful. I came to tell you that Shiana wants to visit you again." Why would Odraid announce that? Her words filled him with images of the Dune waif who had become a full reverend mother, the youngest ever, so they said. Shiana, his confidant, out there watching over that last great sandworm. Had it finally perpetuated itself? Why should Odraid interest herself in Shiana's visit? "Shiana wants to discuss the tyrant with you." She saw the surprise this produced. "What could I possibly add to Shiana's knowledge of Leto the Second?" he demanded. "She's a reverend mother. You knew the Atreides intimately." "Ah, she's hunting for the Mentat." "But you said she wanted to discuss Leto, and it's not safe to think of him as Atreides." "Oh, but he was. Refined into something more elemental than anyone before him, but one of us, nonetheless." "One of us." She reminded him that she, too, was Atreides, calling in his never-ending debt to the family. "So you say. Shouldn't we stop playing this foolish game?" Caution gripped him. He knew she saw it. Reverend mothers were so damnably sensitive. He stared at her, not daring to speak, knowing even this told her too much. "We believe you remember more than one goal a lifetime." And when he still did not respond, "Come, come, Duncan. Are you a Mentat?" The way she spoke, as much accusation as question, he knew concealment had ended. It was almost a relief. "And if I am?" "The Tlilazu mixed the cells from more than one Idaho Gola when they grew you." Idaho Gola. He refused to think of himself in that abstraction. "Why is Leto suddenly so important to you?" No escaping the admission in that response. "Our worm has become sand trout." "Are they growing and propagating?" "Apparently. Unless you contain them or eliminate them, Chapter House may become another Dune." "You figured that out, did you?" "Leto and I together." "So you remember many lives. Fascinating. It makes you somewhat like us." How unswerving her stare. "Very different, I think. Have to get her off that track." "You acquired the memories during your first encounter with Mirbella." "Who guessed it? Lucilla?" She was there and might have guessed, confiding her suspicions to her sisters. He had to bring the deadly issue into the open. "I'm not another Kwisatz Haderach." "You're not." Studied objectivity. She allowed this to reveal itself. A cruelty, he thought. "You know I'm not." He was fighting for his life and knew it. Not so much with Odraid as with those others who watched and reviewed the Komai records. "Tell me about your serial memories." That was a command from the Mother Superior. No escaping it. "I know those lives. It's like one lifetime." "That accumulation could be very valuable to us, Duncan. Do you also remember the Xlotl tanks?" Her question sent his thoughts into the misty probings that caused him to imagine strange things about the Tlilazu. Great mounds of human flesh softly visible to the imperfect newborn eyes. Blurred and unfocused images. Almost memories of emerging from birth canals. How could that accord with tanks?
Saitali has provided us with the knowledge to make our own axolotl system, Odrade said.
System? Interesting word.
Does that mean you also duplicate Lilazu's spice production?
Saitali bargains for more than we will give, but spice will come in time, one way or another.
Odrade heard herself speak firmly, and wondered if he detected uncertainty.
We might not have the time to do it.
The sisters you scatter are hobbled, he said, giving her a small taste of Mentat awareness. You're drawing on your spy stockpiles to supply them, and those must be infinite. They have our axolotl knowledge and sand trout. He was shocked to silence by the possibility of countless dunes being reproduced in an infinite universe. They will solve the problem of melange supply with tanks or worms or both, she said. This she could say sincerely. It came from statistical expectation. One among those scattered bands of Reverend Mothers should accomplish it.
The tanks, he said. I have strange dreams.
He had almost said musings.
And well you should.
Briefly, she told him how female flesh was incorporated. For making the spice, too?
We think so. Disgusting. That's juvenile, she chided.
In such moments, he disliked her intensely. Once he had reproached her for the way Reverend Mothers removed themselves from the common stream of human emotions, and she had given him that identical answer. Juvenile. For which there probably is no remedy, he said. A disgraceful flaw in my character.
Were you thinking to debate morality with me?
He thought he heard anger.
Not even ethics. We work by different rules. Rules are often an excuse to ignore compassion.
Do I hear a faint echo of conscience in a Reverend Mother?
Deplorable.
My sisters would exile me if they thought conscience ruled me. You can be prodded, but not ruled.
Very good, Duncan.
I like you much better when you're openly Mentat.
I distrust your liking.
She laughed aloud.
How like Belle?
He stared at her dumbly, plunged by her laughter into sudden knowledge of the way to escape his warders, remove himself from the constant Bene Gesserit manipulations, and live his own life. The way out lay not in machinery, but in the sisterhood's flaws, the absolutes by which they thought they surrounded and held him. There was the way out.
And Shiana knows. That's the bait she dangles in front of me.
When Idaho did not speak, Odrade said, Tell me about those other lives.
Wrong. I think of them as one continuous life. No deaths.
He let a response form silently. Serial memories. The deaths were as informative as the lives. Killed so many times by Leto himself.
The deaths do not interrupt my memories.
An odd kind of immortality, she said.
You know, don't you, that Tlilazu masters recreated themselves.
But you... What did they hope to achieve, mixing different golas in one flesh?
Ask Saitali.
Belle felt sure you were a Mentat. She will be delighted.
I think not.
I will see to it that she is delighted.
My, I have so many questions. I'm not sure where to begin.
She studied him, left hand to her chin.
Questions?
Mentat demands flowed through Idaho's mind. He let the questions he had asked himself so many times move of themselves, forming their patterns.
What did the Tlilazu seek in me?
They could not have included cells from all of his Gola selves for this incarnation. Yet, he had all of the memories.
What cosmic linkage accumulated all of those lives in this one self?
Was that the clue to the visions that beset him in the Great Hole? Half-memories formed in his mind. His body in warm fluid, fed by tubes, massaged by machines, probed and questioned by Tlilazu observers. He sensed murmurous responses from semi-dormant selves. The words had no meaning. It was as though he listened to a foreign language coming from his own lips, but he knew it was ordinary Galak. The scope of what he sensed in Tlilazu actions awed him. They investigated a cosmos no one but the Bene Gesserit had ever dared touch. That the Bene Tlilax did this for selfish reasons did not subtract from it. The endless rebirths of Tlilazu masters were a reward worthy of daring. Face dancer servants to copy any life, any mind. The scope of the Tlilazu dream was as awesome as Bene Gesserit achievements. Saitali admits to memories of Moadib's times, Odred said. You might compare notes with him someday. That kind of immortality is a bargaining chip, he warned. Could he sell it to the honored maters? He might. Come, let's go back to your quarters. In his workroom, she gestured him to the chair at his console, and he wondered if she was still hunting for his secrets. She bent over him to manipulate the controls. The overhead projector produced a scene of desert to a horizon of rolling dunes. Chapter house, she said. A wide band along our equator. Excitement gripped him. Sand trout, you said. But are there any new worms? Shiana expects them soon. They require a large amount of spice as catalyst. We've gambled a great deal of melange out there. Leto told you about the catalyst, didn't he? What else do you remember of him? He killed me so many times, it's an ache when I think about it. She had the records from Daris Balat on Dune to confirm this. Killed you himself, I know. Did he just throw you away when you were used up? I sometimes performed up to expectations and was allowed a natural death. Was his golden path worth it? We don't understand his golden path, nor the fermentations that produced it. He said this. Interesting choice of word. Amentat thinks of the tyrant's eons as fermentation. That erupted in the scattering, driven also by the famine times. You think he didn't anticipate famines? She did not reply. Held to silence by his mentat view. Golden path, humankind erupting into the universe, never again confined to any single planet and susceptible to a singular fate. All of our eggs no longer in one basket. Leto thought of all humankind as a single organism, he said. But he enlisted us in his dream against our will. You Atreides always do that. You Atreides. Then you've paid your debt to us? I didn't say that. Do you appreciate my present dilemma, Mentat? How long have the sand trout been at work? More than 8 standard years. How fast is our desert growing? Our desert? She gestured at the projection. That's more than 3 times larger than it was before the sand trout. So fast. Shiana expects to see small worms any day. They tend not to surface until they reach about 2 meters. So she says. He spoke in a musing tone, each with the pearl of Leto's awareness in his endless dream. So he said, and he never lied about such things. His lies were more subtle, like a reverend mother's. You accuse us of lying. Why does Shiana want to see me? Mentats. You think your questions are answers. Odred shook her head in mock dismay. You must learn as much as possible about the tyrant as the center of religious adoration. Gods below, why? The cult of Shiana has spread. It's all over the old empire and beyond, carried by surviving priests from Arrakis. From Dune, he corrected her. Don't think of it as Arrakis. Or raucous. It fogs your mind. She accepted his correction. He was fully Mentat now, and she waited patiently.
Shiana talk to the sandworms on Dune, he said. They responded. He met her questioning stare. Up to your old tricks with your Missionaria Protectiva, eh? The tyrant is known as Dur and Guldur in the scattering, she said, feeding his mentat naivete.
You have a dangerous assignment for her. Does she know?
She knows, and you could make it less dangerous.
Then open your data systems to me.
No limits?
She knew what Bell would say to that. He nodded, unable to allow himself the hope that she might agree.
Does she suspect how desperately I want this?
It was an ache where he held his knowledge of how he might escape. Unimpeded access to information. She will think I want the illusion of freedom.
Will you be my mentat, Duncan?
What choice do I have?
I will discuss your request in council and give you our answer.
Is the escape door opening? I must think like an honored mater, he said, arguing for the Comais and the watchdogs who would review his request.
Who could do it better than the one who lives with Mirbella? She asked.
Corruption wears infinite disguises. Tlilazu Thuzen. They do not know what I think, nor what I can do, Saitali thought. Their truthsayers cannot read me. That, at least, he had salvaged from disaster. The art of deception learned from his perfected face dancers. He moved softly through his area of the no-ship, observing, cataloging, measuring. Every look weighed people or place in a mind trained to seek flaws. Each Tlilazu master had known that someday God might set him a task to test his commitment. Very well. This was such a task. The Bene Gesserit who claimed they shared his great belief swore it falsely. They were unclean. He no longer had companions to cleanse him on his return from alien places. He had been cast into the Pawinda universe, made prisoner by servants of Shaitan, was hunted by whores from the scattering. But none of those evil ones knew his resources. None suspected how God would help him in this extremity. I cleanse myself, God. When the women of Shaitan had plucked him from the hands of the whores, promising sanctuary and every assistance, he had known them false. The greater the test, the greater my faith. Only a few minutes ago, he had watched through a shimmering barrier as Duncan Idaho took a morning walk down the long corridor. The force field that kept them apart prevented the passage of sound, but Saitali saw Idaho's lips move and read the curse. Curse me, Gola, but we made you, and still may use you. God had introduced a holy accident into the Tlilazu plan for this Gola, but God always had larger designs. It was the task of the faithful to fit themselves into God's plans and not demand that God follow the designs of humans. Saitali set himself to this test, renewing his holy pledge. It was done without words in the ancient Bene Tlilax way of Satori. To achieve Satori, no understanding is needed. Satori exists without words, without even a name. The magic of his god was his only bridge. Saitali felt this deeply. The youngest master in the highest Kel, he had known from the beginning he would be chosen for this ultimate task. That knowledge was one of his strengths, and he saw it every time he looked in a mirror. God formed me to deceive the Pawinda. His slight, childlike appearance was formed in a gray skin, whose metallic pigments blocked scanning probes. His diminutive shape distracted those who saw him, and hid the powers he had accumulated in serial Gola incarnations.
Only the Bene Gesserit carried older memories. But he knew evil guided them. Saitali rubbed his breast, reminding himself of what was hidden there with such skill that not even a scar marked the place. Each master had carried this resource, a nullentropy capsule preserving the seed cells of a multitude, fellow masters of the central Kel, face dancers, technical specialists, and others he knew would be attractive to the women of Shaitan, and to many weakling Pawinda. Paul Atreides and his beloved Chaney were there. Oh, what that had cost in searching garments of the dead for random cells. The original Duncan Idaho was there with other Atreides minions. The Mentat Thufir Hawat, Gurney Halleck, the Fremen Naib Stilgar. Enough potential servants and slaves to people at the Lazu universe. The prize of prizes in the Nullentropy Tube, the ones he longed to bring into existence, made him catch his breath when he thought of them. Perfect face dancers. Perfect mimics. Perfect recorders of a victim's persona. Capable of deceiving even the witches of the Bene Gesserit. Not even Cher could prevent them from capturing the mind of another. The tube he thought of as his ultimate bargaining power. No one must know of it. For now, he catalogued flaws.